politicians and deals. Sometimes it feels like that's all we hear about.
Right.
But have you ever pictured it like this? What if those deals were being cut not in some smoky back room, but out in the open, like actually out in the fields with shotguns in hand?
Okay, I'll bite. What are we talking about?
Today's deep dive takes us to Denmark. We're looking at a tradition called the Folketingsjagten, which basically translates to the parliamentary hunt.
Parliamentary hunt. So, like, literally politicians going hunting together. Is that what we're saying?
That's exactly it. We found this article in NetNature, a Danish hunting and nature publication, and it describes these organized hunts put on by the Danish Hunting Association. They would bring members of parliament together with hunting advocates.
Interesting. I mean, on the surface, it sounds a little, I don't know.
A little unorthodox.
Yeah. A little unorthodox. Like, what's the thinking there? Just a bunch of folks blowing off steam.
Well, the article suggests it was more than just a social outing. Imagine you're out in the field, tracking game, maybe sharing a thermos of coffee. The formality of parliament melts away, and suddenly you're having a very different kind of conversation.
You're thinking about building relationships.
Exactly. And maybe, just maybe, finding some common ground on issues related to hunting, land management, that sort of thing. The article points to this as a particularly Danish way of approaching things.
I can see that. There's something about that shared experience. It breaks down barriers. And let's be real, a lot gets done over a good hunt. Or at least that's how it used to be, right?
Right. And it wasn't just any old hunting trip. We're talking about events with some serious historical weight behind them. The article specifically mentions a guy named Erik Skeel.
Skeel, that name rings a bell.
He was, and his family still is, practically royalty in the Danish hunting world,
Yeah.
deeply involved in the hunting association. And guess what? A lot of these hunts took place on land owned by Skeel or other families like his.
Okay, so now we're talking about more than just informal chats. This is about access, tradition, maybe even a bit of power dynamics at play.
You got it. All woven into this seemingly simple act of going hunting. And that's what makes this such a fascinating deep dive. We're going to unpack how this tradition, the Folketingsjagten, might have shaped Danish society in ways you wouldn't expect. And it gets even more interesting because this article, it goes on to talk about what it calls the golden age of the Folketingsjagten. And we're not just talking about bagging a ton of game here.
Right.
This is where some really big names start popping up, including former Prime Minister Poul Schluter. Apparently, he was a regular at these hunts.
Wow. Now that you mentioned it, I do remember seeing a picture of him in some hunting gear. Always thought it was just for a photo op, but I guess not.
Sounds like it was more than just a photo op. The article really plays up his involvement, which makes you wonder.
Yeah, what's that?
Well, Schluter was known for his wit, his charisma. So I can't help but imagine him in this setting, cracking jokes, telling stories. It kind of humanizes the political sphere a little, don't you think?
Absolutely. Makes you wonder what kind of deals were struck out there amongst the trees, right? Who managed to get the prime minister's ear and what did they have to say for themselves?
Right. And maybe more importantly, what did he say back? Were there any legendary Schluter quips from these hunts that got passed down through the years? Like, remember that time Schluter said? That kind of thing.
I love it. It's like a whole secret history of Danish politics hidden within these hunting trips. But I guess, like all good things, it couldn't last forever, right?
Unfortunately, no. The article, it goes on to explain how the Folketingsjagten eventually came to an end.
What happened?
Well, according to the article, it seems that in 1992, a bunch of hunting associations decided to merge.
Okay.
And for whatever reason, amidst all that restructuring, the Folketingsjagten just kind of fell by the wayside.
Huh. So, no big scandal, no dramatic showdown, just a quiet fade into the history books.
It seems that way. Although our author, Michael Sand, he definitely seems a little wistful about it. He even argues that the current advisory council, while important, doesn't quite replace what was lost when the Folketingsjagten ended.
Interesting. What do you think he means by that?
Well, it seems like he believes something vital was lost, that direct line of communication between lawmakers and those most impacted by hunting regulations. There's something to be said for that kind of face-to-face dialogue, even if it's happening over a hunting rifle.
Yeah. It makes you wonder, when we formalize these systems, when we move away from those more, shall we say, organic forms of engagement, what are we really losing in the process?
So we've got this tradition. It was impactful, but now it's gone. And our author, Michael Sand, he's not just reminiscing, he's making a point, right?
Definitely. He doesn't just mourn the loss of the Folketingsjagten, he's calling for its revival. And we're not talking about some dusty, old-fashioned reenactment society.
Right.
He suggests organizations like the Danish Forest Association and Landbrug and Fødevare, major players, should take the reins.
And he even claims that this idea is more sustainable now than it was back then. Now, that's intriguing. More sustainable, how so?
It's a bold statement, and it gets to the heart of his argument. He seems to be implying that the current system, with its advisory councils and formal procedures, maybe isn't as effective or as representative as we think. Maybe those direct informal interactions, flaws and all, had a value we've underestimated.
Okay, so we're not just talking about bringing back hunting trips. We're talking about a fundamental shift in how interest groups interact with those in power. But isn't that a slippery slope? I mean, doesn't that open the door to potential conflicts of interest?
It's a valid concern, and Sand acknowledges it. He argues that a revival of the Falkenning's Jagtind would need to be carefully considered and adapted for our times. He's not suggesting a return to some idealized past. He's prompting us to think critically about how we structure dialogue and influence in a modern democracy. Are there ways to incorporate elements of informal engagement without sacrificing transparency and accountability?
So what does this all mean for our listener? We started with a deep dive into a uniquely Danish tradition, but it feels like we've surfaced with some pretty big questions about governance, influence, and the way things get done in any society.
Exactly. The Folketingsjagtind, whether or not it ever sees a revival, serves as a fascinating case study. It reminds us that the balance between formal systems and informal interactions is constantly evolving.
Yeah.
It prompts us to ask ourselves, what are the lost traditions of dialogue and collaboration in our own fields, our own communities? Are there ways we can create spaces for genuine, productive engagement that go beyond the boardroom and the ballot box? These questions resonate far beyond the forests of Denmark.
It's a thought-provoking end to our deep dive this week. And for our listener out there, we'd love to hear your reflections. What traditions of dialogue have you seen disappear? And what could we gain by reviving them, even in a new form, for a new era?